Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. Actually, the Bordens received only 29 whacks, not the 81 suggested by the famous ditty, but the popularity of the above poem is a testament to the public's fascination with the 1893 murder trial of Lizzie Borden. The source of that fascination might lie in the almost unimaginably brutal nature of the crime, given the sex, background, and age of the defendant, or in the jury's acquittal of Lizzie in the face of prosecution evidence that most historians today find compelling. I'm Jen Martinelli, and this is Strangeful Things.
Ready. Go.
Will you come back to me?
Not so fast. What are these?
Strange bullfing.
All right. So first, I've got creepy music to play.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm playing it. Do you hear it?
Yeah.
Are you creeped out?
Yeah, it sounds like SoundCloud.
It sounds like SoundCloud?
Yeah, you know, those people that are always like, I don't know, whatever DeviantArt is for musicians.
Okay, maybe that's what it is. This is DeviantArt for musicians. Okay. All right, could be. All right, so what do you know? Well, first, disclaimer, I don't know what Acadia knew before, but he watched two documentaries about this topic, so he might know more than me now.
Yeah, well, I wanted to be prepared, and also my name's not Acadia for this show, because since this takes place in Massachusetts, my name is Sully.
Oh, Sully! I like it!
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
We're going to talk about murders.
Murders, yeah. You know it. Yeah, we are. All right. So, what do you know about Lizzie Borden was my original question, but now my question is, what do you know that's not something amazing that you just learned last night that you're going to save till the end?
All right, here's what I knew before I watched the documentaries, and by watched, I mean I mostly watched one and one I fell asleep on.
Right.
Because I was all excited for the big blizzard that turned out to be a...
Yeah, I know. What a fail.
Because whatever, life.
Yeah.
All right, so here's what I know. Lizzie Borden lived in Fall River, Massachusetts, and in 1892, her wicked stepmother, who didn't really seem to be that wicked, and her skinflint father... both got their heads chopped up by somebody, and Lizzie had a lot of really shitty alibis, and regardless, she got acquitted.
All right.
How's that for a synopsis?
That's pretty good. I like your synopsis. All right, so really, when I was a kid, so the reason I picked this is because when I was a kid, I went through this phase, maybe a lot of kids go through this, when I was like, somewhere between like 7, 8, 9, where I was obsessed with murders, and this was one of them that I was obsessed with. I remember getting a bunch of books from the school library, like about various famous or less famous murders, and reading them. And I don't know why I was so excited about it, but I guess I was preparing my future me to be on this show. So I knew the rhyme, of course. I don't know why that's a thing that's, like, common to know. I think it's a little creepy. I mean, do, like, little kids just learn it
and
say it to each other?
Did you ever go, marijuana,
no.
LSD, scientists make it, bus drivers take it, why can't we?
No. That must be a main special.
Yeah, well, Maybe just Ohio was full of Amish losers.
Pennsylvania.
Well, more Amish.
Actually, yes, there were no Amish around me in Ohio, but there were a lot where I lived in Pennsylvania. Anyway, so I knew the rhyme, and I know that I read probably many accounts of the murders. And I'm pretty sure that I was sure that she did it. And I think that I thought it was, like, fascinating because it was, she was a woman, and of course most, like, famous killers aren't women, and also because it was, like, old-timey. So all the pictures of her are, like, you know, with the dress up to the neck and the, like, black and white, and she's very serious, and she kind of looks creepy. Yes, one might say matronly. So that's why I decided to do this. So, I'm gonna give some background now on her life and family. So, Lizzie was born on July 19th, 1860 in Fall River, Massachusetts. Her father, Andrew Jackson Borden, grew up himself in very modest surroundings and struggled financially as a young man, despite being the descendant of wealthy, influential local residents. He eventually prospered through the manufacture and sales of furniture and caskets and went on to become a successful property developer. Lizzie and her older sister, Emma, who was 9 years older, were brought up going to church regularly. As a young woman, Lizzie was very involved in activities related to her church, including teaching Sunday school to children of recent immigrants to America. 3 years after her mother's death, her birth mother, in 1863, Lizzie's father married Lizzie's stepmother, Abby Durfee Gray. So Lizzie was 6 years old at the time. It appears that Lizzie and her stepmother may not have had a very cordial relationship, and Lizzie apparently referred to her as Mrs. Borden. She may or may not have believed that Abby married her father for his money. Their live-in maid later testified that Lizzie and Emma rarely ate meals with Andrew and Abby. So, the family is wealthy. However, as you described him as a skinflint, he was not exactly generous, or he wasn't like ostentatious or anything either, but I think like to a fault. They didn't have indoor plumbing on the first floor of their house.
They had a chain toilet in the cellar though.
Ooh. Well, there you go. They had
and oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, see, and you're probably going to get to this, so I'm going to try and not blow up your spots.
Oh,
but
that's
like
fine.
He bought this house and he actually put some money in it, but it was on like the shitty side of town.
Right. I was going to say daughters he lived in like
what the fuck? We're rich. Why don't we live up on the hill with the other rich
exactly.
people? Exactly. He was like, you just put the coffee grounds back in and brew it again.
Wait, the best part of this might be if you keep doing voices. So, I mean, I don't know how linear I'm going to be about this because it kind of comes up a little later again about him being kind of a cheapo, but they lived in like an okay area of town, but not like the rich area of town where maybe the daughters might have liked to live, and maybe some of their other members of their family lived. So let's talk about the facts of the murder and trial. So on a hot August night, or not hot August night, sorry, I made that part up. On August 4th, it was hot, apparently. I don't know why it's worded so badly here. In 1892, at their house at 92 2nd Street in Fall River, Bridget, quote, Maggie Sullivan, the maid who lived in the house, was resting in her bed after having washed the outside windows. She heard the bell at City Hall ring and looked at her clock. It was 11 o'clock. Then she heard a cry from Lizzie Borden, the younger of the two Borden daughters, saying, "Maggie, come down quick, father's dead, somebody came in and killed him." A half hour or so later, after the body, quote, hacked almost beyond recognition, of Andrew Borden had been covered and the downstairs searched by police for evidence of an intruder, a neighbor who had come to comfort Lizzie, Adelaide Churchill, made a grisly discovery on the second floor of the Borden home. The body of Abby Borden, Lizzie's stepmother. By the way, I have a question already. In a half hour of comforting Lizzie, nobody went looking for the wife?
Well, because according to one of, as far as I know, according to one of Lizzie's many made-up crazy lies,
right,
the mother was out.
Oh.
Like, visiting someone.
Oh. Well,
she's like, yeah, no, she's not here.
That's weird, because I read something different about what she said. So, interesting. Lizzie.
Well, I can't believe that a crack squad video on YouTube would mislead me, so.
No, I don't. Well, she did give many conflicting statements, so let's just go with that. So investigators found that Abby's body was cold while Andrew's had been discovered warm, indicating that Abby was killed earlier, probably at least 90 minutes earlier than her husband. Under the headline, "Shocking Crime, a Venerable Citizen and His Aged Wife Hacked to Pieces in Their Home," the Fall River Herald reported that news of the Borden murders spread like wildfire and hundreds poured into Second Street, where for years Andrew Borden and his wife had lived in happiness, according to the paper. The Herald reporter who visited the crime scene described the face of the dead man as sickening. Quote, "Over the left temple, a wound 6x4 had been made as if it had been pounded with the dull edge of an axe. The left eye had been dug out, and a cut extended the length of the nose. The face was hacked to pieces, and the blood had covered the man's shirt. Despite the gore, the room was in order, and there were no signs of a scuffle of any kind." Initial speculation as to the identity of the murderer, the Fall River Herald reported, centered on a Portuguese laborer who had visited the Borden home earlier in the morning and asked for the wages due him, only to be told by crotchety Andrew Borden that he had no money and to call later. The story added,
"I ain't got no money, you filthy Portuguese. Get on down the street. Get out of my dooryard."
I like the voices. They really add to the story. The story added that medical evidence suggested that Abby Borden was killed by a tall man who struck the woman from behind. This is according to the newspaper. This is not, you know, this is, I mean, it's the 1890s. I'm not sure how much of this is police work and how much of this is just sensationalist jazz.
We could just make it up.
Yeah, let's just
no one
say
can
this.
Check anything.
That's right. So, so far, did your documentaries tell you anything different about it to this point?
About the breakdown of
about
how,
like,
they found everybody,
how they found everybody and stuff.
His eye was chopped in half.
Yeah, well, hey, this is the stuff we bring you here on Strangeful Things. You're
yeah,
welcome.
And his nose was chopped completely off.
Ooh.
And it is thought that both him and the mother were dead with the first shot.
Oh, so and first shot killed him, and then just more hacking happened.
Yes, generally when you do that kind of thing, it's because you're probably mad.
Right, right.
And it's not like because you're trying to write your name in their face with axe.
Right. And also, that would explain why there was no struggle if the first hit killed them.
Yeah.
Like, if you're sitting on the couch and somebody just walks up to you and waves a hatchet at you, I'm pretty sure you're not going to have a lot of time to figure out what to do before
the
hatchet.
Well, if you're sleeping and the first thing that happens is your eye gets chopped in half, then you're double doomed. Because that's going to occupy your attention, I would assume.
Oh, God, that's really,
I hate to get bogged down in details, but there seems to be a problem with my eye.
I seem to be having an eyeball problem. Oh, God.
I can see my eyeball with my other eye.
Oh. Oh, God. All right. So 2 days after the murder, papers began reporting evidence that 33-year-old Lizzie Borden might have had something to do with her parents' murders. Most significantly, Eli Benz, a clerk at S.R. Smith's drugstore in Fall River, told police that Lizzie had visited the store the day before the murder and attempted to purchase prussic acid, a deadly poison. A story in the Boston Daily Globe reported rumors that, quote, Lizzie and her stepmother never got along together peacefully, and that for a considerable time back they have not spoken, but noted also that family members insisted relations between the two women were quite normal. The Boston Herald, meanwhile, viewed Lizzie as above suspicion. Quote, from the consensus of opinion, it can be said, in Lizzie Borden's life, there is not one unmaidenly nor a single deliberately unkind act. So even in, I just want to point out that even in 1890, the Herald was kind of a rag, and the Boston Daily Globe was trying to actually get the story.
Well,
although,
all right, that's fair.
Although, but actually, just as a side note, the Boston Globe has now declared that they are no longer a news organization, and they're just a lifestyle reporting something or other, jazz or some such nonsense. Apparently, they're
so
not
basically
a real paper
they're
anymore.
Now our competition.
Yeah, so fuck them.
Fuckers.
All right.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
What I do like, idea of going, you know what I'll do? I'll poison them.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. You can't have that poison without a prescription.
Oh, well then.
Well
I'll just
then,
chop
good
their
thing
faces
that
off.
Stores sell everything, because I guess I'll just have this hatchet.
The hatchet was from Andrew Borden bought the I don't even know if I included this. I think Andrew Borden had the hatchet because he had a barn on the property where pigeons were roosting or something, and he was using it to kill the pigeons. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
Ugh. Well, supposedly the hatchet, you know, was there on the property.
He killed all her pigeons.
Oh. That was it. They
in
were her
a fit
pigeons.
Of, like, stop eating my valuable corn.
Right, right.
Or
that's
some
right.
I don't know why.
Yeah,
or
right,
he said,
right.
Them's good eating, and whatever. He killed them all. I'm not saying that the guy didn't have it coming. I'm just saying that, like, it's, from what I know, evidence-wise, there was a hatchet in the basement that looked like it had been cleaned and then, like, scuffed around in the dirt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I think we might be getting to some more of that coming up. All right.
Yeah, all right.
So, police came to the conclusion that the murders must have been committed by someone within the Borden home, but were puzzled by the lack of blood anywhere except on the bodies of the victims, and their inability to uncover any obvious murder weapon. Increasingly, suspicion turned toward Lizzie, since her older sister Emma was out of the home at the time of the murders. Investigators found it odd that Lizzie knew so little of her mother's whereabouts after 9 a.m., when, according to Lizzie, she had gone, quote, upstairs to put shams on the pillows. They also found that's what I was talking about. They also found unconvincing her story that during the 15 minutes in which Andrew Borden was murdered in the living room, Lizzie was out in the backyard barn looking for irons, which are lead sinkers, for an upcoming fishing excursion.
Except that in the fucking barn, the barn was covered with dust and there were no footprints, and it was like 9 million degrees in the barn.
Right, so probably she wasn't out there doing that.
Right.
See, look at this useful info you're telling me from your
I'm the fill-inner.
Man, it's great. The barn loft where she had looked, oh yeah, revealed no footprints on the dusty floor, and the stifling heat in the loft seemed likely to discourage anyone from spending more than a few minutes. So, theories about a tall male intruder were reconsidered, and one leading physician, quote-unquote, explained that hacking is almost a positive sign of a deed by a woman who is unconscious of what she is doing. Okay, so that reminded me of the story about that we just talked about the person who was supposedly hypnotized by having a gun handed to them.
Oh, you mean the guy in the news story that got hypnotized because he just like went into crazy murder overdrive because he was the handyman, but right. the guy that lived in the house but wasn't the husband gave him the gun
and said, "Here's some a gun." Reason. And then that made him be hypnotized into killing people. Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm not really sure what that theory means. A woman who is unconscious of what she is doing. That's apparently what a leading physician decided. Of course, leading physicians in 1890s, I'm pretty sure, did a lot of things that we would not consider sensical right now.
So probably not.
I don't know how much weight we can give to that description. So on August 9th, an inquest into the Borden murders was held in the courtroom over police headquarters. Before criminal magistrate Josiah Blaisdell, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
District, well, that fucking name is badass.
It is. Oh, yeah, it kind of is. District Attorney Hosea Knowlton questioned Lizzie Borden, Bridget Sullivan, household guest John Morse, and others. During her four hours of examination, Lizzie gave confused and contradictory answers. Almost like a woman who's unconscious of what she's doing. Maybe the physician was right.
Yep. Almost a woman who has the vapors.
Oh, she might have the vapors. That's coming up.
She might have been hysterical.
She might have been hysterical. I mean, you know, women, ladies, lady parts yep. and stuff.
Yep.
Maybe she had blood coming out of her eyes or her wherever.
You're not going to get that kind of social satire past Josiah Blaisdell.
That's right. 2 days later, the inquest adjourned and Police Chief Hilliard arrested Lizzie Borden. The next day, Lizzie entered a plea of not guilty to the charges of murder and was transported by rail car to the jail in Taunton, 8 miles to the north of Fall River. Oh, it's like a trip through the suburbs of my town.
Aww.
On August 22nd, Lizzie returned to a Fall River courtroom for her preliminary hearing, at the end of which Judge Josiah Blaisdell pronounced her, quote, probably guilty. And
he knows what's up, that's why.
That's right. And ordered her to face a grand jury and possible charges for the murder of her parents. In November, the grand jury met. So, by the way, this is the 1890s, and this does not seem particularly speedy to me. From August to November, that's how long it took?
Yeah, but nothing was speedy back then. Like,
I guess.
If you said, oh, well, I've got to go to England, honey, and I'll come back with the money for the rest of our estate.
It would be like a year and a half.
When he came back, like their kids would be in high school.
That's true, I guess. So in November, the grand jury met. After first refusing to issue an indictment, the jury reconvened and heard new evidence from Alice Russell, a family friend who stayed with the two Borden sisters in the days following the murders. So, that's interesting. So they refused to issue an indictment, and then I wonder what happened. The judge was just like, not good enough. Here's some more evidence. I can't tell from this exactly what happened. Like, well, we refused to issue an indictment. Okay, well then listen to this lady. Oh, all right. Well, thanks for the new relevant information. Okay, so
well,
Russell...
I think you can. I'm not 100% sure, but I think you could. You can do that. Like, if the grand jury doesn't do an indictment, you can just go back.
Yeah, well, maybe
like it's not like double jeopardy if you're just looking for
no, it's the same case. Well, it's a little bit like maybe when I was on that murder jury, which you can learn all about on our episode about Boston, Massachusetts.
That's right.
I forget which number it is, 6 or 7 or so, something like that. We initially didn't think we could come to a consensus on the murder charge, and we went back to the courtroom and said that, and the judge said, I'd like you to deliberate some more. Like, they can ask you to think more if they don't think you've, like, considered it long enough or something. So maybe it's something like that. I don't know.
Or maybe it was olden times and everybody was just corrupt and they went,
maybe. Or that. Russell told grand jurors that she had witnessed Lizzie Borden burning a blue dress in a kitchen fire, allegedly because, as Lizzie explained her actions, it was covered with old paint. Okay, Lizzie. coupled with the earlier testimony from Bridget Sullivan that Lizzie was wearing a blue dress on the morning of the murders, the evidence was enough to convince grand jurors to indict Lizzie for the murder of her parents. Also, by the way, as a side effect, the Borden sisters no longer were friends with Alice Russell after this. They defriended her.
That's weak. Weak. fucking traitors.
I know, right? I mean, if you can't burn your murder dress in front of your best friend Alice, who can you burn it in front of?
Yeah, well, maybe now that I think about it, if I was burning alleged murder dress,
right,
and my friend ratted me out, I might not want to be their friend anymore.
Well, exactly. So, I guess that was the decision that was made.
I know. And guess who's not famous now? Alice.
That's right, Alice. Exactly. You could have been famous.
Gone along with it. Maybe you would have got a little something something out of the big fortune.
Instead, you got unfriended, and that's that. Nobody cares about you. That'll teach you. That'll learn you. So what about this? Do you have anything to add from your
You mean about the trial and the evidence and stuff?
Anything to this point so far. There's more. We're coming up to more details on the trial. I just want to know if, like,
I mean,
did you know about the dress thing?
I knew about the dress, but I burn dresses all the time.
Well, I mean, I burned three yesterday. It's totally a normal thing to do.
And the other thing is that it's the so there was nobody else in the house.
Right.
Because the maid was...
The maid apparently had the vapors.
The maid was outdoors washing the windows. The windows must have been fuck dirty.
Right.
If she was washing them and couldn't see in to see someone get murdered. Like, how dirty were they? Or how bad was she at washing them?
Well, so when Lizzie called her down to see the dead guy, she was laying down. She was, like, taking a nap post-window washing. So maybe that's when the murder happened, while she was napping.
Boy, they took a lot of naps in that house.
I know.
Maybe she did.
In hot August.
A hold of some of that poison and just kind of let it waft through the house.
Maybe she did.
And then she just got sick of waiting and chalked. I believe... Well, see, here's the... There's a bunch of reasons why this just seems to not dance at all.
Uh-huh.
One of them being... So if the mother got killed at 9:30 and the father got killed at 11.
Yeah.
If it wasn't Lizzie.
Yeah.
And it was somebody else.
Yeah. Where?
Where were they?
Right. Well, also, but I also have this question, right? So I do have a legit question here. So she's burning a dress. Supposedly, it sounds like you would think because maybe it has blood on it. But if she had killed her dad and then called the maid down immediately, wouldn't she? If she was wearing the dress. That's not when she burned it. She burned it later.
There would have been blood all over the place.
There would have been blood all over her.
You can't fucking. You can't.
You can't hack up a
person's
face.
And I don't care
face.
That they didn't have CSI back then or anything like that. You can. Everywhere.
Yeah. There would be blood everywhere.
And
interesting.
Even now, there's some people say that she got naked and did it, which then makes burning the dress even dumber.
Yeah, right.
Because if she was naked,
why is she burning the dress?
Did she do use the dress for a towel?
Also, how much more disturbing would that make it if your daughter was chopping your face up if she was also naked?
Yeah, then I if
here comes
if I
my
had
naked
daughter
with an axe,
she was going to kill me with an axe. I would hope that the first thing that would happen is that my eye would get chopped in half and I would die so that I didn't have to see my naked daughter killing me.
Oh, by the way, sorry, we keep saying axe, but it was really a hatchet.
Yeah, but
axe
I mean,
is
we
in the poem.
Save on syllables.
Axe is in the poem because it rhymes with wax, but it's actually
bandwidth a is precious.
That's right. So I have some questions about the dress situation, but let's continue. So, the trial of Lizzie Borden opened on June 5th, 1893, in the New Bedford Courthouse before a panel of three judges. I don't get why that is, but a high-powered defense team, including Andrew Jennings and George Robinson, who was the former governor of Massachusetts, represented the defendant, while District Attorney Knowlton and Thomas Moody argued for the prosecution. What? Hold on. I have a question already. Okay. Before a jury of 12 men, Moody opened the state's case. When Moody carelessly threw Lizzie's blue frock on the prosecution table during his speech, which I thought she burned, wow, I have no idea what any of this means. It revealed the skulls of Andrew and Abby Borden. So they had, like, snuck the skulls into the trial or something, and then apparently the sight of her parents' skulls caused Lizzie to fall into a faint that lasted for several minutes.
Sending
a thrill of excitement through awestruck spectators and causing unfeigned embarrassment and discomfiture to penetrate the ranks of counsel. So, Moody, who was the prosecution, spent 2 hours delivering a speech. 2 hours. That is a long speech, buddy.
Yeah, especially if it's 1892 and the only air conditioning you have is, I don't know,
nothing.
Letting your bloomers get be exposed to the window.
He described her as being the only person with both the motive and opportunity to commit the double murders. And then he pulled from a bag the head of the axe he claimed Lizzie used to kill her parents. So, I don't understand if the dress existed or didn't exist. It sounded like the dress existed. So, who cares if she burned some other dress? I'm thoroughly confused by that.
Well, it was her ridiculous stories and the dress burn and that got her indicted in the first place.
Right. So I'm very upset about this.
Well,
because I obviously read several different things and I'm very confused about the fact that there apparently was a dress presented at the trial. So did she burn it or not?
Yeah, but I don't think they used it as evidence.
Oh, they were just like, it was a blue dress like this.
Yeah, because, okay. I mean, they would have just, because you can't just bring the busted up skulls in like a
right.
a basket.
Here's
you
my,
know?
Here's my basket of skulls.
Aha!
Look upon them!
And like, plus they didn't have a chance to start with anyhow. Right.
Well, one would think.
Well, no, the prosecutors were boned.
Oh, yeah, the prosecutors were boned.
Because they had the hatchet that they had was clean and the handle was broken.
Yep.
They didn't have much in the way of forensics back then.
Right. It was just they never did any fingerprinting. Right.
It was all circumstantial.
Yeah. Yep. Well, so of the witnesses that the state used to testify, the most important was Bridget Sullivan, the maid, who testified that Lizzie was the only person she saw in the home at the time her parents were murdered, though she provided some consolation to the defense when she said that she had not witnessed, during her over 2 years of service to the family, signs of the rumored ugly relationship between Lizzie and her stepmother. Quote, everything was pleasant, she said. Lizzie and her mother always spoke to each other. Other prosecution witnesses disputed Sullivan's assertion that all was fine between Lizzie and her stepmother. For example, Hannah Gifford, who made a garment for Lizzie a few months before the murders, described a conversation in which Lizzie called her stepmother a mean, good-for-nothing thing and said, I don't have much to do with her. I stay in my room most of the time. Welp, maybe Sullivan had a reason to tell fibberoos. What do you think?
I think that they... I think that it makes a lot more sense that the murder was commissioned.
Mmm, interesting.
Because it doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever that there would have been a big, basically you have, all right, here's a woman, and, I mean, her sister wasn't there. First of all, there were two women who basically had nothing to do all day but sit around wishing that their skin flint father would fucking not make their house so shitty and hate their stepmother. So they had plenty of time to do some plotting and planning.
Right. It's true.
So they must have had some money.
Well, yeah, of course they did.
So, I mean, back then, you know, you could say, I'll give you a shiny nickel if you chop down all the trees in my yard. And people, gee, mister, really? And do it. So, I mean, hiring somebody to kill someone must have been like, I don't know, about tree fitting.
Oh, God.
At the most.
Oh. Well, yeah. So, next, there were witnesses who described events and conversations after the discovery of the murders. Get ready for this name. Dr. Seabury Bowen.
Ew.
Seabury. Seabury.
It's called Seabury.
Seabury. The Borden family physician, summoned to the home by Lizzie in the late morning of August 4th, recounted Lizzie's story about looking for lead sinkers in the barn and her contention that her father's troubles with his tenants probably had something to do with the murders. On cross-examination, Seabury agreed with the defense's suggestion that the morphine he prescribed for Lizzie might account for some of the confused and contradictory testimony she gave at the inquest following the murders. Adelaide Churchill, a Borden neighbor and another important witness, remembered Lizzie wearing a light blue dress with a diamond figure on it, but did not recall seeing any blood spots on it. John Fleet, the assistant marshal of Fall River, recalled his interview with Lizzie shortly after the murders. Lizzie corrected him, he testified, when he called Abby Borden her mother. "She was not my mother, sir," Lizzie replied. "She was my stepmother. My mother died when I was a child."
Hmm. And my mother died by not having a chopped up head.
My mother did not die from a hatchet in her skull.
She died from not that. So obviously I cannot be a suspect in that case either.
Oh, Lizzie. Oh, Lizzie, you scamp or something. So you remember our friend Alice, who got defriended?
Yep.
By the Borden sisters.
Blocked and reported.
Blocked and reported. She gave additional testimony where she described a visit from Lizzie the night before the murders, in which she announced that she would soon be going on a vacation and felt, quote, that something is hanging over me. I cannot tell what it is. Then, according to Russell, after describing her parents' severe stomach sickness, her parents were sick the day before they were murdered, by the way, to their stomach. So, I know she didn't buy poison, but that sounds a little shady to me.
Well, back then, weren't most of the things you ate poison?
Well, yeah, that too. Apparently, Lizzie attributed it to bad baker's bread. Lizzie told her, "I feel afraid something is going to happen." And explaining her feeling, she told Russell that she, quote, wanted to go to sleep with one eye open half the time for fear somebody might burn the house down or hurt her father because he was so discourteous to people.
Wow.
So,
Let me tell you what, that old bastard
is very discourteous.
I was thinking about it and I wondered what would happen if he was on the couch and someone chopped his eyeball in half. Because it seems likely. What do you think, Alice? Do you ever think that way about your father?
Your voices are the best thing. They're the best. You remember this next time you're being discourteous to people, Acadia. Remember.
You could end up... I'm the most courteous one out of the whole group.
You could end up with your eyeball chopped in half with a hatchet. So, be careful.
Now I got that to worry about.
Oh, God.
That replaced shitty Storm Stella.
I know. What a lame storm.
So, what you're telling me is that Lizzie went over to her friend's house
the night before to say, I feel like something might happen to my father. He is very discourteous. I must sleep with one eye open. Maybe I should go on vacation.
And then another thing! Do you happen to have any blank prescriptions? Because then I could get that poison that I wanted. To kill the weevils.
Oh, God. To kill the weevils. Well, yes. Of course that's what it's for.
Well, it was full of weevils because it was textiles.
Ah, see? It all comes back to the textiles.
Yep. It was a horrible, horrible place, Fall River. Every place in Massachusetts was the worst because it was all full of giant mills where women worked like we now make Chinese kids work.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
That's called paying it forward.
There you go.
Or backward. I don't know. Someone's getting paid, and it's the Chinese kids.
Oh.
Hey, better them than you.
Apparently, the defense made its case using, for the most part, the state's own witnesses. So, one reporter wrote, while he was covering the trial, "There has never been a trial so full of surprises, with such marvelous contradictions given by witnesses called for a common purpose. The defense kept hammering at the contradictory testimony of key prosecution witnesses. The defense also explored holes in the prosecution case, where, the defense asked, is the handle that supposedly broke off from the axe head that the state hauled into court and claimed was part of the murder weapon? The state had no answer. The defense also exploited the government's own timeline, which allowed from 8 to 13 minutes between Andrew Borden's murder and Lizzie's call to Bridget Sullivan. Robinson tried to suggest the difficulty of washing blood off one's person, clothes, and the difficulty of washing blood off of one's person, clothes, and murder weapon, and then hiding the murder weapon all within that short span of time.
No way.
No way you couldn't do it, or yes, you could
do
it?
No way you could do it.
Yeah.
You know, they wore so many clothes then.
I know. She was probably wearing, like, a heavy wool dress and, like, 17 layers of things under it.
And petticoats.
Yeah.
And a girdle and, yeah. I don't know,
everything.
Like, suspenders and whatever the fuck else they were making in the fucking textile mills, which is why they needed all the textile mills.
It's true. Plus, if every time you get paint on your dress, you burn it. In the kitchen, I mean, more textile mills.
Yeah. They, if it wasn't for that nosy Alice, they never even would have suspected a thing.
I know, right?
And it was also her constantly changing story.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And also hating her mother, her stepmother. That, too.
But, I mean, at the end of it, if I had been the prosecutor...
Yeah.
I would have went, okay, well, I know that our American legal system is based on proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
But let's just pretend for a minute that all I had to do was to point out all the reasons that it was obviously her based on how stupid every other story is.
That's true. Like a disappearing tall man.
The old man... got back to the house without anybody knowing, snuck upstairs, killed his wife, then came back down and laid on the couch, and a murderer happened to come in and go, lucky for me, this dude had this hatchet right here, and chop his face up.
Was that a theory that he killed his wife and then somebody killed him?
No, I actually just invented that theory, but it's as good as any other Lizzie didn't do it theory because it's fucking stupid. So, the second one is crazy murderer went up to kill the wife.
Nobody saw him.
and didn't do anything wrong, like, the well, I better get the wife out of the way, because eventually, perhaps the father will come back.
That's right.
And hopefully...
Not I go mean, looking like, for the wife?
Can you see the guy up there in the bedroom with, like, her head all, like, oozing all over the bed, and he's going, fuck, this is a terrible plan. I have no idea what time it is. When's he going to come home?
Oh, God.
What if the first thing he does is come up here?
Right.
Oh, crap.
Exactly.
You know what? I'm just going to risk it. And goes downstairs, and holy shit, he's asleep on the couch. It's well, this perfect. Is my lucky day.
That's right.
All my murdering really paid off.
Oh, my God.
So if he had taken that tack...
Right.
I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't have convicted her. Just because you could probably come up with a better alibi for every other person on the planet.
Right. Right.
Except fucking Alice.
Right, Alice.
Oh, well, wait a minute.
What? Maybe Alice did it?
Maybe Alice did do it.
Oh, hmm.
Maybe.
Yes.
All right, well, okay, so if they were, like, super smart criminals...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here, I'm gonna hatch a fucking scheme right now.
Okay.
And since it's just you and me on the show right now, this can be how we kill B-Nev.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, right, but ready? With the caveat that I would never kill B-Nev, but go ahead.
Yeah, that's good. That actually fits in with my story. You just keep saying stuff
God
like that.
Damn.
Okay, so...
Oh, Jesus.
I say to you, fucking B-Nev, I'm gonna have to strangle her. I don't know what else to do. And you go, no, don't. And I say, well, all right, but geez, I really, really want to all the time. But you know what? Maybe I won't strangle her. Maybe I'll drown her in paint, orange paint. Okay. So
okay.
Then. I somehow find out where B-Nev lives and have a bunch of paint. But what I don't do is kill her. Instead, you, who were in on it all along, sneak in. You drown her with the paint. I burn my shirt for some reason. And then you go to the cops. Well, all right, well, number one, he was talking about killing her.
Right.
And everybody knows that we're BFF, so I never would have done it. And two, he burnt that shirt.
Right.
And why would we have done this? Because we will split that sweet extra murder payoff insurance money we talked about a few episodes
ago. Oh, yes, the murder insurance. Yes.
So well, we take out, I don't know, let's say... $100 million of insurance on BNet.
That's going to be an expensive policy, so we're going to have to kill her really fast.
Yeah, no, right off the bat, like we'll write them a check. And did you know? This is a little brief aside. So, had you ever had a time in your life where you had to write a check, but you really didn't want it to go right through to the bank?
Oh,
right
yes.
Away?
Are you kidding? A million times.
Okay, well, if you took like a pen cap.
Yeah.
And you know the little the numbers on the bottom of the check that told the routing number and the account number and stuff?
Yeah.
If you took a pen cap and rubbed it back and forth on those, not to rip them or obliterate them or anything like that,
right.
But just like really gave them a good rub down.
Yeah.
Those were printed in magnetic ink, and that's how the machines read what it was.
Uh-huh.
So if you did that, they had to pull it and process it by hand, and it would give you like an extra day.
Wow, look at you, sneaky pants.
That's right. So we do that to the insurance company.
No, but stop. That doesn't work. They won't pay
Why?
Out if you they won't pay out if you've never paid them.
We just need another day to get it together. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
So anyway, if I were going to do that and you were in on it, the only way that the whole thing would work, because the whole thing against me is circumstantial.
Mm-hmm.
They can't prove I did it.
Since you didn't do it, there's going to be no proof that you did it. Right.
And they would never... Oh, wait a minute. I just realized the whole hole in this plan.
What's the plan? What's the hole?
the fucking Dipsy Doodle double cross. That's what it would be. Right. You would actually figure out a way to actually frame me. You would keep all the money.
That's right. But that's not a Dipsy Doodle double cross. You always misuse that. A Dipsy Doodle double cross would be if you said, this is from like episode 3 or something of ours. We described a Dipsy Doodle double cross. Would be like if Acadia was like, hey, Jen, let's go rob a bank. And I was like, okay. And then we robbed the bank, and while we were there, Acadia killed somebody, and then I got tried for murder.
Oh, yeah, so then it would have to be, hey, Jen, let's go help B-Nev paint her house.
And then you would murder her, and then I'd get...
Yes.
Then it would be a Dipsy.
And then throw the paint on you and book it out of the...
You bastard.
Well, that's what you get for trying to screw me out of the insurance money.
God this damn is it.
See, that's maybe that's why it couldn't have been Alice, because they could never have fucking they strung that shit together.
Come up with
and
this.
It's obviously a well-known fact from anyone that's watched any reality show ever. If you have three women involved in anything, two of them can't fucking get along.
Oh.
So if you put Alice and Lizzie and the sister who supposedly was out of town, which I don't believe for a fucking minute.
Well, she wasn't home. Was she out of town?
Yeah, I suppose she was supposedly out of town. Plus, you got the maid in there,
yeah.
Which is the real juicy part of this whole thing. Mm. Accent on the juicy that I'm going to wait to see if you get to.
Oh, maybe I don't. I don't think I'm in. Well, we'll see, I guess. All right, well, so let's hear a little bit more about the trial.
Mm-hmm.
The decisive moment in the trial might have come when the 3-judge panel ruled that Lizzie Borden's inquest testimony, full of contradictions and implausible claims, could not be submitted into evidence by the prosecution. The judges concluded that Lizzie, at the time of the coroner's inquest, was for all practical purposes a prisoner charged with 2 murders, and that her testimony at the inquest, made in the absence of her attorney, was not voluntary. Lizzie should have been warned, the judges said, that she had a right under the 5th Amendment of the Constitution to remain silent. The judges rejected the state's argument that Lizzie was only a suspect, not a prisoner, at the time of the inquest, and that anyway, her statement should be admitted because it was the nature of a denial rather than a confession. Mm-hmm. So the judges were like, nope, nope, suck it, prosecution, and that's why the prosecution had no evidence.
And the prosecutor was quoted as saying, that's bullshit, America sucks.
That sounds like something they would say. So they had a final defeat in the case. They wanted to have the druggist, Eli Bentz, recount for the jury his story of Lizzie visiting a drugstore on the day before the murders and asking for 10 cents worth of prussic acid, a poison. With the jurors excused, each leaving the courtroom with a palm leaf fan and ice water. Well, that's an interesting detail. The state tried to establish through medical experts, druggists, furriers, and chemists the qualities, properties, and uses of prussic acid. The judges, after listening to the state's foundational case, concluded that the evidence should be excluded. So they didn't know about the poison, and they didn't know anything that she said while she was making her statement. So basically they just had some lady saying she burned a dress, and one lady saying she didn't like her mom, and another lady saying she did like her mom. And apparently, that is not enough to convict someone of murder.
That's bullshit. I'm telling you, it's bullshit.
Well,
so she got off scot-free with the old man's money that she had to split with the sister.
Yeah.
So if you're going to look at, I guess now we're at the theories section of it, which is basically 2 theories. One, obvi, Lizzie did it.
Well.
Or somebody else did it.
Right. So in summation, the defense pointed out that there was no direct evidence, no blood, no proof that the weapon they found had anything to do with her or that she'd ever touched it or whatever. And He also made fun of the theory that she killed her parents naked. And then the jury deliberated for an hour and a half before coming back and saying not guilty. And then Lizzie passed out again, by the way.
Then she what? Oh,
oh no, she didn't pass out. Again? She yelled and then sank into her chair and then let out a second cry of joy. And then everyone...
Did she yell, whoopity-doo?
Whoopity-doo-doo.
Thanks, Alice, you goddamn bitch.
I have some things that are interesting that have not been discussed yet, just kind of like a list.
Throw them out there.
Items. Okay.
Throw them out there. All I'm going to do is just make everything salacious.
Okay, well, I didn't know if you had like anything else you wanted to say that you had learned.
I mean...
I can say my stuff and then you can tell me if there's anything
else.
Okay. So, there may have actually been a lot of people who wanted to see Andrew Borden dead. He had a net worth of almost $10 million in today's money. And he was very wealthy, but also very unpopular. Frugal to a fault, he was a self-made man who had become the head of one of the town's largest banks and a substantial property owner. The dour businessman had also made many enemies on his rise to the top.
You're goddamn right, I'm dour.
And rumors swirled that Andrew and Abby had perhaps been killed as revenge for Andrew's shady business dealings.
And I'm shady, too.
I'm dour and shady.
I'm dour and shady, and I'm mad all the time.
I also might be maudlin and melancholy. So, apparently, it wasn't, like, it seems to be a theory, you know, a pretty well-held theory that the guy's remarriage did piss his daughters off. So,
well, sure, because she was way younger than him, and she stood to get all that sweet, sweet loot.
Well, so there you go. Apparently, and of course, despite his wealth, as we discussed earlier, the home lacked many of the most basic conveniences, including indoor plumbing.
I think the cellar counts as indoors, though.
I guess, but I think, you know...
And it was a chain toilet. It wasn't like they were pooping in a bucket and
But my understanding is, you know, there was no plumbing on the first floor. So, like, there was no, like... So you had to go down to the basement, and there was no, like, sink or anything on the main floor of the house? That's kind of unnecessary seeming. I don't know.
True.
Seems less than ideal, if you ask me. Apparently, at this point in their life, the women who were in their 30s and already considered spinsters by society grew increasingly frustrated and resentful, with Lizzie in particular often exhibiting signs of mental instability. I don't know. I don't know what any of that means, really. It's just kind of some random facts. I guess it points to Lizzie wanting to do it.
I know what it means.
You know what it means? So,
yep.
So as we already have talked about, there was not really any forensic evidence. The hatchet was discovered in the basement, but the blade was clean, and the handle had been broken off, according to police, by Lizzie. But, of course, nobody ever found it. Fingerprint testing was just starting to be used, but it was never conducted as part of the inquiry. and of course, they weren't allowed to present about the poison at trial. So they were just screwed, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Despite... This isn't about the trial anymore. This is just some extra facts about Lizzie Borden. Despite her notoriety and money, she struggled later in her life. So she and Emma inherited their father's estate, gaining the financial freedom they had long craved, Lizzie bought a large house in one of the city's most fashionable neighborhoods and spent her time traveling to Boston and New York to indulge in her love of theater. Just 5 years after the murder, Lizzie was briefly in the headlines again when she was accused of, but not tried for, shoplifting. In 1905, the sisters became estranged over Lizzie's relationship with actress Nance O'Neill, which Emma allegedly disapproved of.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They rarely spoke in their later years, but died within days of each other in June 1927. And they're both buried beside their murdered parents in the family plot in Oak Grove Cemetery.
Well, I mean, there was nothing you could...
I know.
...do about it. I mean, they were cheap, so they probably weren't fucking spending a lot of extra money on... cemetery plots.
Probably not. So, what do you think about this Nance O'Neill story?
Well, if the sister was like, you know what? I'm sick of you lezzing out with this chick because it's fucking olden times and I think you're it's probably a crime worse than murder.
Well, yeah, I mean, what could be worse?
Hey, it was olden times. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that it's probably true.
I'm speaking as an olden times person when I agree with you, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So, she was like, "Look, I can't be having that. So I'm leaving."
Right.
So now I heard a theory.
Okay. What's your theory?
That the reason that there was any murdering done at all, and it was, in fact, not Lizzie that did it, but it was the maid.
Oh, really? No, I did not hear this. All right. Why did the maid do it?
Because the mother caught her and Lizzie lezzing it up.
Oh, really?
Yep. Eating at the Y, which meant...
Oh, my God. You did not just fucking say that.
What?
Oh, my God.
That's what they called it back then.
Hoo-ah! Oh, my God.
Jesus. The mother caught him, and they were like, ah, fuck, we better chop her in the head with an axe, because we'll get sent to church prison or some shit.
Well, yeah.
Massachusetts.
Because wasn't the mom...
done burning witches like a half an hour ago.
Right? I mean...
yeah.
Plus, wasn't the mom upstairs to change shams on the pillows?
Yeah, and maybe she was looking at somebody's sham in somebody else's pillow. Because remember, according to Lizzie, she was supposed to not even be around.
Interesting.
So what if she really wasn't supposed to be around, and then she just fucking showed up and went, oh, goodness, well, I'm going to tell your father, and he's going to throw you right out of the will that you probably weren't in anyway now, you sinner.
And Lizzie was like, hold on while I kill you with this axe that I'm conveniently holding.
Well, I mean, if there were two of them, I mean, that maid looked pretty husky.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, it's very, very possible that, you know, you could have, you know, held her down long enough to then go get the hatchet and chop her in the head. And then, since it wouldn't have surprised the father whatsoever to have the maid at the house, since he was paying her to be at the house.
Right. It was kind of her job.
Right. He could have been like, yep, well, I'm going to go to sleep now, maid, who's obviously not going to kill me, because if you were going to do that, why wouldn't you already have done it?
Right.
And chop.
Oh, you broke up. And what? I'm sorry. Hello?
Chop?
God
nothing?
Damn. Okay, now I hear you. But I missed it again. I just heard you say chop.
Yeah, that was it.
Oh, that's what it? Happened. Just chop?
He was like, all right, I'm going to take a nap and then chop.
Okay. Well... there are letters that were recently discovered from Lizzie's time in jail at the Fall River Historical Society. According to a spokesman, they went to a friend of hers, Annie, who was a childhood friend. And a spokesperson from the society says, examples of Lizzie Borden's letters are extremely scarce in general, but the ones she sent Annie from jail are especially important. They are the only known correspondence that reveals Lizzie's state of mind as she awaited her fate, and the content is both poignant and surprising. She poured her heart out to Annie, and she was clearly frightened. I had trouble trying to find the text from the actual letters, but here is one of them, if you're interested.
Yeah, who wouldn't be? But you gotta read it in an old-timey voice.
Oh boy, okay, I'll see what I can do. My dear Annie, I thank you for your nice long letter and wish I could answer it as it deserves, but I am far from well, and much I would like to do has to be left undone. By the way, I have not trouble in reading your writing. My spirits are at ebb tide. I see no ray of light amid the gloom. I try to fill up the waiting time as well as I can, but every day is longer and longer. I began to think the tangled threads will never be smoothed out. My friend, do not make any plans for me at Christmas. I do not expect to be free, and if I am, I could not join in any merrymaking. I don't know that I ever could again, certainly not at present. You know my life can never be the same again if I ever come home. Forgive me for this sober letter, but my heart is heavy, and the burden laid upon me seems greater than I can bear. Sincerely yours, L.A.B.
Labia.
Apparently at about this time, Lizzie became sick, and the sheriff's wife took her into their home so she could recover.
Oh, for fuck's sake, man. Everybody's on her side. She paid everybody off with that. She's like, no, as soon as my father's dead, I'll be able to pay you.
Oh, God.
Oh. So, as far as the whole lesbian angle.
Yes.
Probably, the fact that, Bridget then, like, went to work someplace else since the people that she worked for had been chopped up and married a dude. Either she went super deep undercover.
Right.
Or that's just a crazy theory. But the concept of it being either A, Billy Borden, Andrew Borden's illegitimate son.
Oh.
Yeah, he was in the mix. You know, the bastard sons are always mad about
they're always a problem.
Kept out of the will and that kind of shit.
They're always showing up and stabbing you in the gut at dinner or whatever.
Yep, and saying, you know what? You want to fucking... I'll cut your eye in half. And then there was John Morse, who was Lizzie's maternal uncle.
Yes, he was like, there earlier in the day.
Hardly ever visited because it was... He was the brother of the original wife.
Right.
He just showed up the night before the murders.
Mm, that's interesting, isn't it?
I'm going to stay over. Mm-hmm. I know that my wife's been dead for, I don't know, whatever, fucking 20 years, but hey, family's family, right?
Yep. Here's one more fun fact. You can stay at the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast in Fall River, Massachusetts. It's actually at 92 Second Street, which was their home. You can watch an annual dramatization of the events and stay overnight in the bedrooms originally occupied by Lizzie, Emma, and their parents. And you can even enjoy the same breakfast the family shared on the morning of August 4th, 1892, before two of them got their heads chopped up.
Filled with poison. Why would anybody do that?
I don't know.
Also, I hate bed and breakfast.
I've never stayed at one.
It's just such a fucking... It's just like a hotel for lazy assholes.
I've never stayed at one, but I like hotels because I like to be in a big building where everybody leaves me alone unless I ask them to do something for me.
Right. I don't want to fucking some old granny peeking her head in and go, do you need anything, honey?
No, thanks, no,
I
Grandma. Don't.
I need to be in a fucking hotel, not somebody's house. Just calling it a bed and breakfast... It's just Airbnb, but the people didn't leave.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
That's all it is.
That's kind of true. I agree. Good call. Well, I got no further information, so do you have anything else to share?
Well, I
any,
think that...
Any additional thoughts?
That the whole concept of the... how do I want to put it? The rhyme?
Mm-hmm.
I think that there was something more going on that meets the eye. Because they were so far off on how many whacks that they had in the rhyme.
Hmm.
It didn't have to be 40.
Right. So like, what do you think? What? Do, what? But it's just a silly like nursery rhyme. Why do you think?
Yeah, but it could have been 20.
Yeah, but
the only thing it couldn't have been was 10 and 11. Literally, any other set of numbers would work.
Oh, this is getting too deep for me.
So maybe the kids are on to something, and maybe
the kids secretly know.
Yeah, maybe instead of what was it total?
Oh shit.
29?
It was 29.
Instead of 81?
Yeah.
Maybe the hatchet was smaller than they thought, and it took extra chomps.
Oh, hmm. Well, there you have it, folks. Extra chops.
I mean... the only thing I can say about this entire case is... old-timey people had a really hard time solving murders.
Yes,
because they literally had no...
they had no idea what happened.
...idea how to solve murders, because they hadn't... they didn't have a bunch of stuff to fucking...
parade
practice
around.
On.
Right.
Like, to go, oh, you know what we shouldn't do next time? Let everybody in town run through the house where the person got murdered. Because that guy just went, oh, well, this looks like a nice knife. I think I'm going to take it home for my fishing kit. And they'd be like, did you find the murder weapon? Nope. Looks like Hiram took it, and now it's his. I can't go take it, because that would be stealing, and the evidence chain has been broken. And the other guy was like, what's an evidence chain?
Oh, God. That's too bad.
So, like, as you practice, you can't do anything.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I mean, I don't know. I think there's been a lot. This is kind of like our Jack the Ripper.
Right.
Except that, like, no one thinks, like, the president did it or whatever when all the shit they do with Jack the Ripper.
Right.
But it really, really does seem to me in every instance that, number one, the pictures that they took of the crime scene are pretty fucking gnarly.
Yeah, they are. You gotta put those in the post for sure.
And number two, however else you slice it, get it? Slice.
Ha.
Somebody who hated them did it.
Right.
Unless... now, see, no one would have been that smart back then. How would you know... no, and maybe the people back then didn't even say that. Maybe the person was just really bad at telling... like, maybe it was just a regular murderer who was terrible at figuring out if somebody was dead.
Maybe.
Like, they were just still bloating him, must be alive, better keep chopping.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know. This is kind of all over the place. But she got away, she squandered all her money... her sister left her because she was living it up with Nance.
Mm-hmm.
Good old slutty Nance.
Aw. Come on now.
I wonder if she ever made it big.
No, she didn't.
Well, no. She was hanging around with murdering Lizzie.
Well, at the time, she had been in silent movies and she had made the breakthrough into talkies, I read. But, No, she never did get, like, super famous.
Huh. Well, she also married a dude. So maybe...
I think there were... let me give you a tip. In the early 1900s, I'm pretty sure a lot of lesbians were marrying dudes.
That's probably very true, except for Lizzie. Lizzie...
she just chopped people up with axes, potentially. Hatchets.
Was really fucking terrible at wooing lesbians.
Maybe.
And was like... yeah, you want to be a lesbian? Sure! And then All right. Well, now that we've made out and scissored and whatnot, now I can tell you about how I chopped up my parents. And they're like,
"Nope, I'm gonna leave now."
I'm leaving now.
They decided that that was how all lesbians were, and they never went back.
They were like, "Oh, apparently all lesbians chop up their parents with hatchets, so no thanks."
Yep. And they were like, "I love my parents. I don't want to do that." So I'm going
to
just
go
find myself a man.
Way to go, Lizzie.
Yeah, way to go. Lizzie ruining it for everyone.
Jesus.
Lizzie pretty much ruined everything for everybody.
She pretty much did.
It's true. Even though it was Alice that did the crime.
Mm. Well,
secret, dirty, murdery Alice.
That's it. We're donezo.
All right, well, all I can say is that my big theory about the lesbian murder is not as good as my theory about the fact that the mother got killed by the maid who was just annoyed, and then and then the burglar just happened to want to kill the husband, the father, just like, because, oh, and the hatchet happened to be laying around.
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
Totally, I mean, legit. How many people could there possibly have been in Fall River? And if 94% of them wanted to
kill that guy, yep,
exactly, for no reason, like, that's the other piece of
it. I don't think it's for no reason.
If somebody owes you money and you kill them, how are you going to get your money?
I don't know. I don't know that it's about owing money. I don't know. I mean, I read something about someone thinking that his tenants were mad at him. Like, who knows?
I'm sure everybody was mad at him.
Any guy who's a rich businessman guy who's been in a bunch of different businesses probably has like 1,000 people that fucking hate him.
Yeah, he was like Mr. Potter and It's a Wonderful Life. Everyone wanted to kill that old fuck.
Yeah.
But none of them had the balls to do it except George Bailey.
Oh.
Spoilers.
That's not a spoiler.
Pushes his wheelchair down a snowy road into a river.
Lies.
So yeah, that's to me, if you live in a time where you could just write on a piece of paper, "I owe you $100," signed
Acadia,
Lizzie Borden's father, and the fucking cops would go, "Oh, this looks legit. You better pay up." I don't know why you have to run around killing people for it.
That's true. All right, well, thanks for...
Well, apparently, you only love doing cases that are in the state that you happen to be in time.
But that's not true. I was obsessed with this when I was a little kid, and I'm not from Massachusetts. And
right,
of course, the other one is because that's where I was on a jury.
What about the art museum, Blanche?
Well, that's because, yeah, fine. That was because we went to the art museum.
And then you went to New York, and you didn't murder anyone.
Well, next time I'll murder somebody.
Well, now you can't. It'll have to be the next time.
God damn it. Shh, stop talking about it. Every time you say a thing, then I can't do it that time.
Yeah, so stop. And B-Nev will never listen to this, so she'll never know. So let's volunteer to help her paint her place. Orange.
Okay. All right.
And you know what? To make it, throw it off the trail even further,
yeah.
Safety orange.
Oh, Jesus Christ. All right.
No one would ever believe that.
No, clearly not. All right.
All right, then.
All right, then. Well, thanks.
We solved the case.
It
was the guy that
happened to cross the place after the maid killed the mom.
Yeah, it was the guy that Lizzie made up later that she saw in the backyard who went upstairs and killed the mother and then, I don't know, sat around for an hour and a half hoping that the father would come home and then went, "Fuck, it's hot in here," and went downstairs and went, "Hot diggity, he's sleeping," and chopped him up too.
All right. Case solved.
That man's name was Edgar Allan Poe.
Wow. Amazing.
Yep. Well, he may have already been dead by then. Or was he?
Oh, Jesus. All right.
It was either Edgar Allan Poe or John Wilkes Booth.
Oh,
who,
Jesus.
If you look at old pictures, kind of look alike. So, I don't know.
All right. That's enough.
Fine. You never want me to solve anything. You just want to keep these things as mysteries. You're hiding too much. You're sitting on all that fat textile money, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. You got me.
Son of a bitch. Your family invented corduroy.
Oh, I wish they did. That would be amazing.